Desert Island Discs. As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
This week, ladies and gentlemen, our castaway is a singer, the tenor Peter Pears. Mr. Pears, apart from professional interest, do you play records a lot for relaxation?
Not a great deal, but sometimes I long to hear a piece by, shall we say, Delius that I haven't heard for years and years. And either I go out and buy the record if I haven't got it, or I go and look up in my rather meagre library of discs for the old piece. And I get a great deal of satisfaction then. If I find it there, I enjoy it.
Did you have any kind of plan in choosing your eight for exile?
I suppose basically it really is nostalgic, really. After all, I'm not so young anymore, and I've had 30-odd years of musical life, and it's those peaks in my career which I would like to preserve if possible, peaks of my own experience and of listening to other people's music, to other people's performances. I want to be reminded of old friends, old sounds, old voices.
What's the first disc you've chosen?
Well, it is a bit of Delius, in fact, which I'm very fond of and which recalls, as nothing else does to me, the English countryside, the scene of Suffolk or Sussex in early May, and incorporates one of the most beautiful English folk tunes, that is Brig Fair by Delius.
Delius's Brig Fair, conducted by Geoffrey Toy. What's your second disc?
Well, I started singing Dowland songs almost as soon as I could sing. And Dowland and the Madrigalists are my great loves. And so I thought that I would take one disc, anyway, of the finest lutenist we've had since Dowland's day, and one with whom I'm proud to have been associated, Julian Bream, playing Captain Piper's Galliard.
William Bream playing Captain Piper's Galliard by John Dowland. Mr. Pears, what part of the country do you come from?
I come from Sussex. I spent the first 18 years of my life in Sussex.
Did you go to a musical school?
Yes. Lancing was musical when I was there, what, 30, 40 years ago.
Yes.
I helped to start the orchestra there.
What was your instrument?
Well, it turned out to be, in fact, the bassoon, simply because nobody else really dared to try it, I think.
And when you left Lansing?
I had a year at Oxford as a temporary organ scholar at Harvard.
Yes.
And then, having failed to pass my pass mods, I did the traditional thing of going to teach at my old prep school.
Mm. Were you taking a serious interest in singing yourself at the start?
I'd always sung. I sang in choirs all the time. I was encouraged to try for a scholarship at the Royal College of Music. And I didn't get the open scholarship, but I was offered an operatic exhibition.
Yes. Was opera what you had in mind?
No, I can't really say it was. It was really concert and oratorio that I was more interested in.
Yeah.
However, I wasn't going to refuse a good offer like that. So I went to the college and did my best with Cosi and unsuitable things like Rigoletto.
Mm.
And I took part in a memorable performance of the Village Romeo and Juliet of Delius with Sir Thomas Beecham conducting. And then I really had to earn more money. My father had retired by then. I was the youngest of seven and so on. And so I joined the BBC chorus.
Yes.
And later the BBC singers.
And then?
During my time with the BBC, I had the chance of going to America on two tours with the New English Singers.
Yes.
And they were directed by Cuthbert Kelly, who was a very remarkable musician and a very remarkable man, and who taught me a great deal about madrigals and Elizabeth's music, and indeed words and singing.
Mm-hmm. You had a season at Glyndebourne, playing bits and pieces too.
Yes, chorus, and one or two understudies. A tiny part in Macbeth, as Il Re d'un Cano, where I had to walk majestically across the stage. And as I think he was a butler in Don Pasquale, with one or two lines to utter.
What do you look back on as the first important thing to happen in your career?
I think probably my first performance of the St. Matthew Passion was about the most important thing that happened then. That took place in the parish church at Brighton, and I shan't forget that. The organ was, in fact, about a tone sharp, and it was directed by John Long, who was the brother of the pianist Kathleen Long. And there was no, I think, orchestra, if I'm right. But, of course, the evangelist part is very extended, and I was singing very, very high and deep.
Oratorio, ever since, has played a big part in your career.
Yes, it has, yes. My first introduction, I suppose, to Bach was hearing an old record, which I remember quite well, of the B minor Mass, which in fact is, I think, one of the records that I should like to take to my desert island with me.
Mm-hmm. Which part of the Mass?
Well, there was the duet, Et in Unum, which was sung by Elizabeth Schumann, whom I adored. Although I don't think this is a very specially good performance, quite honestly, but it captures her charm and is a very lovely piece.
Et in Unum from the Bach Mass in B minor, Elizabeth Schumann and Margaret Balfour. A very important part of your career has been your musical partnership with Benjamin Britten. When did you first meet?
I first met Benjamin Britten in 36 or 37, at the time of the Spanish Civil War, through a mutual friend of ours, and we gave our first concert in 38, the winter of 38, at Cambridge, in aid of the Spanish Republican funds. And then, of course, in early 39, we went off to America together.
Yes. This was something to do with film music, wasn't it?
Yes. He'd been offered a job in Hollywood. And I'm not quite sure that it came off, but certainly something of the sort came off. Anyway, we went and did a lot of concerts there, and he wrote a great deal of music and so on, and I did a good deal of studying as well.
And when you came back to London, you joined the Sadler's Wells Opera Company.
That's right, yes.
And, of course, you sang at the first performance of the most successful British opera of this century, at any rate, Peter Grimes.
Yes, that was quite an occasion.
How many times have you sung Peter Grimes now?
I should think I've sung it about 40 to 50 times, something yeah. like that.
And, of course, you've sung in most of the other Benjamin Britten operas, as well as roles at Covent Garden in Mozart, Smetana, Wagner, and William Walton's Troilus and Cressida.
Yes, yes.
Let's have your next record. What, number four?
Well, I think I couldn't resist taking Grimes on the desert island with me. And the bit that I'd like to play now is the interlude, the evening interlude, the beginning of the last act.
The Moonlight Interlude from Peter Grimes, the composer conducting the Royal Opera House Orchestra. We've talked about your operatic career and your oratorio career. Your recital tours with Benjamin Britten, I know you've been to Russia, to the Far East, to Latin America. Are there any countries you haven't been to together?
Well, there probably are quite a lot, but one of the countries that we have not yet been to is Australia. But we shall, in fact, be going there in the spring of next year, of 1970, to take part in the Adelaide Festival.
Of course, you have a lot to do with the running of the Aldeburgh Festival, and this is growing into an important part of English musical life.
I think it is.
A lot of Benjamin Britten's music has been written for you, and you've heard most of it in the process of creation. Does he ask your opinion and advice?
Yes, to a certain extent. If I think that he's making too great demands on myself and my colleagues, well, I pipe up. It doesn't follow that he takes my advice, but at least I don't do any harm, I think, in that way.
3 or 4 years ago, you decided to take a year off, a sabbatical year. How did you spend your time?
A bit of a holiday in India, among other places, and also some hard work, refreshing singing lessons with a woman who I think is a very, very remarkable singing teacher, quite the most well-educated, profoundly learned singer that I've ever come across, Lucy Manen. Mm-hmm. I owe her a great deal, and I'm proud to be a pupil of hers.
Of the very many records you've made yourself, which have pleased you most?
It's very hard to say, isn't it? I think making records is a terrible, terrible process. Just after you've made them, you think, well, that's the best I can do for now. I better let that go, I suppose. And then maybe 6 months later, or even a year later, you hear them again and think, Oh, that's not half bad. Not at all bad. I was very stupid to be so depressed about it. And then, perhaps it's still later, 2 or 3 years later than that, you think, how did I ever dare to put that on record at all?
Will you include one of your own in your Desert Island Discs?
Yes, I think I would. If not for the sake of my own performance, for the sake of the music, and for the sake of my accompaniment. And that would be really the Winterreiser, Schubert.
Mm-hmm. Which song shall we hear?
I think the Im Dorfe, one of the most extraordinary songs that Schubert ever wrote, indeed anyone, with a quite unique piano accompaniment, showing the dogs growling in the distance while the unhappy man sings about his dreams.
A song from Schubert's Winterreise with Benjamin Britten at the piano. What next?
I think that as there'll be nobody on the island to talk to, I should have someone on disc to talk to me. And one of the things that one remembers from one's early days, the most impressionable days in London when one first came to London, were the marvellous performances at Sadler's Wells by the Old Vic Company, and of course particularly the great performances of John Gielgud in things like Tempest and Lear and Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet, and lots more. And I thought I'd like to have, in fact, Gielgud reading a piece of Shakespeare.
Fear no more the frown of the great, thou art past the tyrant's stroke. Care no more to clothe and eat, to thee the reed is as the oak. The sceptre, learning, physic must all follow this and come to dust. Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dreaded thunderstone. Fear not slander, censure rash, thou hast finished joy and moan. All lovers young, all lovers must consign to thee and come to dust. No exorciser harm thee, nor no witchcraft charm thee. Ghost unlaid forbear thee, nothing ill come near thee. Quiet consummation have, and renowned be thy grave.
The voice of Sir John Gielgud. How well do you think you could endure solitude?
Yes, I don't know. Oh, solitude, as the Purcell song goes, my sweetest choice. There are times when one thinks one could very happily endure solitude. On the other hand, I think one has only got to have it for a few days, and one begins to doubt how long one could really tackle it. Well, I mean, one would have to get used to it, wouldn't one? One would have to face it. One would have to simply to be philosophical about it.
Could you fend for yourself?
I'm not a very good handy man. I might be able to build some sort of shelter. I don't think I'd be an inventor and discover all sorts of strange small objects which could be turned into electrical equipment or something.
Don't think so. Let's have your next record.
Well, it would be delicious, I think, on a desert island to hear the harpsichord sound of a Scarlatti sonata played by that marvellous player, George Malcolm, on those exquisite machines, Tom Goff's harpsichord.
A sonata in E major by Scarlatti, played by George Malcolm. And now we come to your last record.
I've been thinking very hard about my last record. And I rather think that I decided that I would plump for a record of Bismillah Khan playing his Chennai.
Piece of Indian music, Bismillah Khan playing the Chennai. If you could take just one disc of the eight you've chosen, which would it be?
Oh, very difficult. I think probably something which has really been a part of me for 20-odd years. I think that would be the Grimes interludes.
The Peter Grimes interlude. And one luxury to take to the island?
I think I know what my luxury would be. After all, we are told that we spend a third of our lives in bed. And that would apply, certainly on a desert island, it might even be rather more than a third. So I would take my very comfortable bed with me.
All right. And one book, you already have the Bible and Shakespeare.
Here I thought I'd be practical. There presumably will be some vegetation on the island.
Oh, indeed.
And hopes, presumably, of some more. I mean, seeds might be wafted in from somewhere else. So I thought I'd get a very attractive book on tropical plants and their cultivation by a man called Brueggemann. It's got marvellous illustrations. I'm not a very good gardener, but I think that with the aid of this book, I might be able to start some quite new species.
Good. And thank you, Peter Pears, for letting us hear your desert island discs.
Thank you for asking me.
Goodbye, everyone.